You are listening to the Punk News Podcast on this Arctic Apocalypse night of February 12, 2014. Let's get ready to freeze. And we are back on the Punk News Podcast. We got a full house today. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. Quick as a flash, leaves a nasty gash, sometimes leaves a rash. We're down with the clash and crash for the sacred mass. Punk, hardcore, new wave at garage and trash. We'll start the fire with just a little bit of ash, like the damned says, smash, smash, smash. And with me is the man who is bright, tight, like dynamite and out of sight, never wrong and always right, willing to fight all night because it's Saturday night when that's all right. Have no fear nor fright because we are here with managing editor Adam White. Adam, how are you doing?
Holy fucking shit. That was incredible. I'm horrible.
You're horrible. Why?
Fuck. Well, okay. I have a child and
so you're horrible by default.
No, but here's the thing. When you have children, they hang out with like other children, and children are dirty. They're like plague rats. So I have this cold thing that's just been kicking my ass all week long, but I thought, you know what? We're going to talk about the Constantines, so I have to show up. So that's what I'm here for.
I had you in mind with that article, Adam, so we'll be talking about that later in the podcast. Listeners, stay tuned, because in about 30 minutes, Adam White is just going to explode in a cloud of rainbow of joy with the reunion of the Constantines. But we'll get to that. Meanwhile, also with us is the man who drops beats that are sticky, never sickly, always sneakily, every weekly, but never meekly, and he's always freaky. It's staff reviewer Tricky Ricky Frankel. Ricky, I believe you now own a piece of Jello Biafra. How wild is that?
It's pretty cool. That was pretty awesome.
So, Ricky, tell the listeners briefly, how is it that you own a piece of Jello Biafra?
Oh, okay. So last Saturday I went to the BARF, the Bay Area Record Label Fair. It was the first one in San Francisco, and there was an Alternative Tentacles booth, and they were selling Jello's personal vinyl underneath the booth. And I took a look, and I found the weirdest thing I could possibly find. There's a lot of range, surprisingly, in terms of genres. For him. But yeah, I took pictures, so check it. I did a review of the whole fair, so you can take a look at the pictures with the hyperlink, I might add. Did not know how to do that before. So yeah, but it was fun.
So what record did you get? Like, what did you buy from Jello?
Let me find it. I cannot pronounce the name of the album, but it's called Spiderbait, and I think they're an Australian band.
And were his records like really expensive or really cheap? Like, what did you pay for that record?
You know what? Actually, I paid $5 for this.
Oh, cheap enough. Did he have like super rare stuff, like rudimentary P9 7 inches and stuff?
No, I didn't look at his 7 inches, but
you think it was just like junk he didn't want?
Pretty much. I mean, it wasn't like, there wasn't like old original Dead Kennedy stuff in there or anything like that.
So, Ricky, you should hold on to that because his DNA skin flakes are probably on that. So when science advances itself, you can clone yourself your own Jello Biafra, which would be pretty wild. And also, speaking of cloning, with us for the first time is the rushing, the bustling, the hustling, out-muscling. You talk trash and she's flushing that shit so you can sit on it because she's crushing. So start all y'all with hush-hushing because it's copy editor Leanne Cushing. Leanne, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. That's quite the intro and so not deserving, but yeah.
Now, Leanne,
I'm doing all right.
Leanne, this is your first time on the Punk News Podcast. Are you thrilled? Are you excited? Are you scared? How are you feeling for tonight's Punk News Podcast?
Oh, totally terrified for criticism later.
Now, Leanne, let's get the listeners, let's let them learn a little bit about you. Now, Leanne, you're up in Boston, right?
Yep.
Do you like it up in Boston? Are you a Bostonite?
No, like I'm not Boston. From fucking Boston. I don't know. I can't get behind the sports douchebaggery that happens here. I've lived here for 2 years. I kind of have moved all over, so I'll be here at least for another year or two, or until the city makes me go more broke. But that's about it.
Now, Leanne, what kind of music do you like? Do you like hardcore? Do you like emo core? Do you like funkadelic? What kind of jams are you into, Leanne?
I'm one of those asshole snobs who say I just like anything that's good. But I don't know, like, pretty much a lot of stuff comes across my desk. If there's talent behind it, I enjoy it. That doesn't matter if it's like emo or hardcore or post-rock or shoegaze or anything, so, yeah.
Leanne, what's the last Hella Sweet concert that you went to?
Oh, well, last night was a fun time. We Elway played a show with some local-ish to Boston bands, the New Warden, Trophy Lungs, and the Off-Season, so that was pretty fun.
Well, very good. And, of course, it's the international broadcaster, the master of disaster that moves faster and faster, your musical pastor that will outlast her, is always silly, talks willy-nilly, if you feel me, it's features editor John Gentile coming at you. And, of course, recording this podcast, it's that guy that is fly, but you don't know why. Maybe it's because he's so sly, up in the sky, and ever so wise. It's Nauman, our sound guy. And unfortunately, I think we had to start this week's podcast off with a little bit of a downer, to tell you the truth, because after our energetic opening, Bob Casale of Devo passed away. He was 61, and he passed away due to a sudden heart attack, basically, which is really kind of sad because Devo's been fairly active the past few years, touring a bit. They put out an album a couple of years ago, and so I think it was quite unexpected. I don't know if there's a whole lot to say except for, like, you know, are you guys down with the Devo? Is there an album or a track you think the Punk News fans should check out?
I know I used to be a little bit obsessed with New Wave back in the high school days, so Devo is definitely on that common playlist, and Peekaboo totally is my favorite song, because it's creepy. Yeah, it is a bummer.
I never really listened to them, but I do like have a lot of respect for them because they were so influential to the scene now, especially. But that's, yeah.
Is Devo a band that you guys think that we pay enough attention to? I mean, we never get, you know, kickback from or pushback from any of the kids or anything when we're talking about them. They're from where they're from, and you know the time that they're active. You know, their connection with punk is very clear. So we never had to do that. But you know, even for being such a classic, they're still incredibly eclectic. And I wonder sometimes if like some of the kids who are, you know, younger and are reading this site or, you know, watching a bunch of Devo videos and being like, what the fuck? Because, yeah.
Yeah, you know, with Devo, I think, you know, they've been active, but not super active. Their prime was definitely, you know, like 73 to 83. And I think they are older than most of the punk news readership. Because, I mean, you think about it, Devo predates the Sex Pistols by like 4 years, 3 years. So before that, when they were like the proto Devo band, even before then, so they're actually like, I mean, honestly, when you think about it, Devo debuted like before Raw Power came out, which is pretty crazy when you think about it. If you watch their, I highly recommend watching their videos, because their videos, you don't even realize it, but they all sort of connect together, and they're some of the most unique, clever, weird videos. And you see how they influence bands like Gwar, or even like the Beastie Boys, actually especially the Beastie Boys, just random wackiness that actually kind of makes sense and fits together. I would also say check out the first Devo album, because the first Devo, it's called Are We Not Men, We Are Devo. It's from 1973, but the lyrics about de-evolution, about how society's breaking down, are extremely punk rock, and plus also like paranoia and government like censoring and government recording of people and private issues of privacy are just all over those records, and plus the songs just rock. So Devo's a fantastic band that I guess punk rock-wise probably should get a little more credit. But I mean, I guess one of the reasons maybe why they haven't like really become like an iconic punk band and are more of just an iconic band is because I don't think Devo ever wanted to limit themselves to being a, quote, punk band. So they didn't push away the punk, like the punk aspect, but they never like did punk bills when they toured. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, also, they were weren't they fairly mainstream during the 80s also?
Yeah, well, they were, definitely. They got really big with the movie Heavy Metal, which they were with James Brown. So, I mean, they were pretty mainstream in the 80s, I guess. But, I mean, I guess punk bands, there were punk bands that were, too. I mean, it's not like the Clash and the Sex Pistols weren't fairly mainstream, you know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
So, anyway, I guess what we'll do is we'll play a tune. This is kind of cool. We've got an exclusive Devo track. It's Devo Live in 1980. It's out. It's from a DVD Live in 1980 on MVD Records. If you're into Devo or even want to check out Devo, MVD Records has a lot of cool Devo things. They've got a Devo Live in 1980 DVD, Devo Live in 2003 in Japan DVD, and also my favorite is called The Complete De-Evolution. It's basically all their music videos, and man, their music videos are so awesome and so funny and so clever. So anyway, we're going to play a track from Devo featuring Bob Casale on guitar. This track is called Secret Agent Man. It's sort of a riff off the old song Secret Agent Man, but the lyrics and the riff are different. The only thing that's the same is like the title and the refrain. So, but I picked this because it's Bob Casale really going to work and really doing some awesome stuff. So this is Bob Casale in Devo doing Secret Agent Man live in 1980 off the Live in 1980 DVD on MVD Records.
That was an exclusive Devo track. This is Adam. I'm going to pick up the story from here and see where we can go. So next, we have some Olympics-related news. The BBC, along with a number of other news outlets, reported recently that Pussy Riot members Maria Alkohina and Nahidzia Tolokonova Kova shit. I can't do it. Were detained by police in Sochi, Russia, where the Winter Olympics are happening. According to the reports, the two, along with two other members of the activist anarchist punk group, were detained on suspicion of theft before being released. And this was on Tuesday when this happened. So you can find the full report on the BBC. It's linked on Punk News. And there's been all kinds of stuff that's come to light since we posted this story. John, I want to throw that to you. The whips.
Yeah, well, Pussy Riot got whipped with whips is what happened. This is kind of crazy. During the arrest, what happens is the Russian police officers, and apparently in Russia, they have like special police officers called Cossacks. Now, if you know your history, in the 17th and 1800s, Cossacks were like special, like, what do you call it? Commandos that like were hired by the Russians to go like blast people away and stuff. And so now I guess special Russian police officers are called Cossacks. And so while they were arresting the members of Pussy Riot, including the two Tala Kanava and Ala Kahina, is they were literally whipping them with whips. Like that's how they arrest people in Russia. Is, you know, in America we just kind of like handcuff people and stuff, but in Russia the way they arrest you is they whip you with whips and tear off your mask and throw you on the ground. And I think it just goes to show that in Russia, you know, we've talked about this before, but, you know, freedom of speech is an incredibly powerful tool and an incredibly important tool. They don't have that in Russia as much as they do here. And so this is kind of the stuff that happens is that, you know, when the police want to lock you up or beat you up, they can, and you really have no recourse. And so they just kick you around a little bit and throw you in the slammer. And so, in a way, though, it kind of backfired on Russia. Well, maybe it did and maybe it didn't. It might have backfired on Russia because, you know, if they just locked them up. I mean, honestly, if Russia had just left them alone, then, like, the 10 people that heard them protesting would have heard it, nobody else. But now it's like another semi-international incident, especially with the whips and all. But on the other hand, it's like, I don't think Russia's really going to change what they're doing anyways. So I guess Russia wins in the end anyways. Like, what do they care, you know?
They kind of are just trying to make an example of the two. I mean, obviously, if anyone's tied to a Pussy Riot and they do anything in anywhere in Russia, it's going to get a ton of media attention. So throwing it around the Olympics, like, obviously, they're going to get arrested and stuff is going to happen. I guess it was just more violent, maybe to try to encourage others not to do it. I don't know.
I'm just fascinated by the fact that you can just get arrested just on the fact that you're a suspect.
Being like, a hooligan.
I mean, like, that doesn't really happen here. That's kind of hard to imagine, just for being a suspect.
Who has
there
whips?
Cases to that, but what?
The Cossacks, Adam. The Cossacks. Listen, Adam, I mean,
like, Indiana Jones has whips. Not
well,
like...
yeah, right? But I mean, like, you figure that, like, of anything in Russia, there has to be no shortage of, I don't know, like, munitions to arm your goons with that you need to use whips like that's I don't know.
Tasers.
I don't want to say it seems more sadistic, I guess, that you're using a whip to enforce your security or what, but it's just weird. It's yeah. It's just a bizarre I don't know. I don't even know. I guess it's no more bizarre than, I guess, like a billy club, if you want to like compare it to something that, like, you know, people who enforce rules over here would use. But holy shit, whips. Like, I have nothing to say about that, except that I'm still sort of surprised that it's even a thing.
Yeah. Would it be terrible and tasteless to say whip it good now? sorry.
I think it's kind of whack how, like, remember a little while ago, Pussy Riot says, we're kicking out the two ladies that were imprisoned because they don't represent Pussy Riot anymore. But it seems they're back in if they got arrested with the group. But I just have to say, that's like the worst aspects of punk rock culture. You see this in, like, Maximum Rock and Roll, 924 Gilman. It's like these two ladies literally went to jail for you and brought you more international consciousness than anything else had combined, and you're going to throw them out? Like, I just think it's crazy. It just goes to show that in punk rock, large segments don't encourage independent thinking and independent thought. They use punk as a set of rules and a doctrine that you have to abide by or you're out of punk, which I just think is ridiculous and completely counterintuitive to what punk rock is supposed to represent. So I just think it's lame that Pussy Riot kicked those two ladies out, especially when they went to jail for him for 2 years and like were starved and beaten and given with hepatitis shots or something.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Plus, what did they get kicked out for originally? It was right after the Colbert interview, I remember.
They got kicked out for doing like that concert in New York City. It's like, let's bring awareness to Pussy Riot. And they say no one in Pussy Riot would do that, so they're not in Pussy Riot anymore. But I guess they're back in because they got arrested with them. So I guess they're not too punk rock to not get arrested with them, you know? Anyways, speaking of people getting kicked out of stuff, Dave Klein, he's back in Screeching Weasel, but only for one show. Here's what Ben Weasel said. Just so the Punk News listeners might know, if they remember, Dave Klein was part of the newest version of Screeching Weasel. He left to join Black Flag, but then after Ron Reyes was kicked out of Black Flag, Dave Klein probably quit Black Flag, although maybe he was kicked out too. So everyone thought that Dave Klein rejoined Screeching Weasel, but he's actually just in for one show. Here's what everyone's favorite punk rock frontman, Ben Weasel, had to say. I love Dave Klein. I love Dave Klein. In fact, he's tempting for us at the San Antonio gig on April 5. But our bassist is the handsome Rickenbacker playing Mountain of Madness, Poutine. Dave's not back in Screeching Weasel, despite what the geniuses at Exclaim reported yesterday. He was just trying to get some Black Flag fans to check out Screeching Weasel and the Stay Dead, which would have been obvious to Exclaim if they actually read the post they cut and pasted for their site. Like my good pal Sarah Palin always says, that's the lamestream media for you. So the point is, does anybody care about Screeching Weasel these days? And what's the? I mean, I gotta say, I kind of respect Dave Klein. I mean, not Dave Klein. Well, I do respect Dave Klein, but I mean, I don't like Ben Weasel. I don't think he's a nice guy, but I respect him for not booting out his current bassist. Like, when Dave Klein left to join Black Flag, he's like, you know, it's cool. Dave Klein's going to Black Flag. When Black Flag asks you to play with him, you do it. But, you know, so they got somebody to replace him because Dave Klein decided to leave Screeching Weasel. So I do respect Ben Weasel for not kicking out the newest bassist just because the old one is available again.
I'm honestly reading this whole story. My thing that I was shocked with was that Ben was taking issue with Exclaim. I don't know how aware Americans are of Exclaim. I guess we link to it on like punk news and stuff like that. But it's the big alternative music monthly up here in Canada. It's distributed and looks a lot like one of those like alternative weekly papers that you'll see in big cities. So it just like, you know, they talk about like indie rock and punk bands and, you know, hip hop and stuff like that. It's not a mainstream thing. Like it's everywhere in Canada, but Canada's not very big. I guess Ben Weasel, that's the mainstream media in your universe, but it's I don't know, it's a weird target to go after.
With Sarah Palin on anything, even if it is lamestream media, it just seems like you're not gonna help your argument or like whatever your statement is.
Can anyone like really take this statement seriously?
Well, no. Well, sort of. I think you can read there's a little bit of bitterness somewhere steeping in there, but
isn't that Ben Weasel in general though?
Probably. I don't know.
I mean, after the South by Southwest occurrence or event or whatever you want to call it, like I can't take this guy seriously anymore. So, it's my two cents.
I don't know if anyone necessarily can.
Yeah, I mean, also, I always like how like people are like Ben Weasel let us down. I can't believe Ben Weasel did that. Didn't he like spend like 30 years writing songs about like going to the pizza parlor and like chewing bubble gum? Like, it's not like he's doing like Crass, you know. It's not like he's doing Do They Owe Us a Living or Yes Sir I Will. You know, he's writing about hitting on chicks and like hitting on chicks. I mean, I don't know why Ben Weasel is this holy grail of punk rock ethos.
We just have some basic standards of conduct that include not like punching a woman on stage. So, you know, if you can stay within those very, you know, very non-stringent sets of rules, then you're generally okay.
Oh,
Ben Weasel. So I guess we should move on from Ben Weasel because I don't know how much attention we need to pay.
Yeah, do you think we pay too much attention to Ben Weasel? I mean, is he even really worth talking about?
I mean, for better or worse, he's you know, Screeching Weasel's legacy is what it is. It's, you know, that it's a band that a lot of people love. I love a lot of their stuff. It's, you know, it makes sense that we talk about Screeching Weasel, that Ben has gone on this road of becoming like an insufferable crank. Isn't really our fault.
Better question. How come some guys, when they become insufferable cranks, everybody loves them? But when some guys become insufferable cranks, everybody hates them.
Probably depends on what they do.
And who they punch.
Exactly.
That's really the long and short of it. You can be totally insufferable. Just don't punch people on stage.
Or throw drum kits at people or any other things that drama queen people do in bands. But yeah. Atari's reference. Anyways, so yeah. I don't know. That's all I have.
All right, so let's move on here. So we're going to talk about the new video from the Menzingers. Noisy premiered the first new song from the band's new record. The song is called In Remission. It's going to appear on their forthcoming full-length titled Rented World, which is out on April 22nd on Epitaph Records. It is a 12-song disc. You can find the video itself and the track listing and the cover art on Punk News right now. So this is a new Menzingers song. I don't recall us having a lot of news about Rented World before now at all.
No,
but
not really.
We don't need our own website. So yeah, it was just kind of like, here's all the news at once. So that was kind of neat. So anyways, yeah. Menzingers song. Anyone listen to this?
Opinions? So yeah. Good.
It's
so good.
Good. It gets stuck in your head.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know what you guys are talking about. I'm not trying to be a hater here. And I mean, I've seen this band like 3 times and they're nice dudes. But I mean, I hear this and I hear Third Eye Blind. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't hear Hook. I don't really hear, like, I just hear, and feel free to counterattack because, I mean, I'm in the minority here. But when I hear this, I just hear like safe, gentle music that's designed to make you feel okay about yourself. And I'm not really that interested in feeling okay about myself.
Right. It definitely is a crowd pleaser. Like, I get that. Also, just sort of redundant hit or whatever, but I don't know, it's still catchy.
Well, I mean, to kind of counter what you were saying, John, I mean, On the Impossible Pass was a fairly self-loathing album. Mm. At least that's what I got out of it.
Yeah, but I mean, look at it this way. We're both Morning Glory fans, right?
Yes, we are.
Morning Glory rocks, man. Morning Glory is wild, hard, fast, mean. This is so gentle. I'm confused as to how you can be such a Morning Glory fan and like this too. Not that you can't like different kinds of music. This just feels very safe to me, you know?
Right. Well, okay, so between the two bands, I would take Morning Glory every time. These guys, I like the vocals on this. I think I've always liked their vocals. I like they kind of go higher and they kind of get a little like kind of raspy and almost sharp. I really like that. I mean, when I saw them on the 3rd and they did this song and it was exactly the same. These guys are kind of, they're just, they have like their own thing and they don't really like, how do I describe it? They really kind of just go their own way and don't really kind of pay attention to anyone else, if that makes any sense.
Right. Definitely. They sound like the Menzingers, and they have slowed down a lot, like on the Impossible Pass, like totally compared to their early stuff. So I think it's just sort of, that's going to be the trend that's what you're going to see in the next album, I'm assuming.
If you listen to A Lesson in the Abuse of Information Technology compared to this, I mean, it's substantial.
They're so different. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say this because I don't want it to be generalized as a comment about bands that play quickly, but I think that there's a certain kind of band, or at least guys that have been influenced by a certain type of songwriting, that once they get more confident will tend to slow down like that, where you know, they feel that you know, they're writing stuff that can stand on its own and be a little bit closer to, you know, when they wrote it with an acoustic guitar compared to what their younger songs, you know, they're able to go and to, you know, and to play the things a little bit slower and not just crank it out and hope that like volume necessarily makes up for their insecurities about it, you know? I mean, and I feel that like the Menzingers are one of those kind of bands that as they go on, they're probably gonna get, you know, they're not going to be as fast and as loud as their earlier stuff, but their songwriting probably be better. And I mean, you look at bands like, say, like the Bouncing Souls have done that. Like you look at like Anchors Away, like that record, where they're, you know, they're totally not goofing around on most of those songs, and the tempo on them is a lot slower. The songwriting is a lot more. It's a lot better, I think, if you want to look at it from an academic perspective, but they're not going crazy. And I feel that in a lot of bands is a sign of confidence. But what I don't want anyone to read into that is that's to say if you're playing loud, fast music, you don't have that confidence. It depends on like what you're shooting for. And the Menzingers are a kind of band that I think can pull that off. So I think that's where John, you know, you can totally be into Morning Glory and you could be into something like this. It's just, you know, different bands, different goals, different things are setting out to do.
I guess, man, it just doesn't like light me on fire, you know. Like I mean, Neutral Milk Hotel is a pretty cool band. They're slow, but it feels much more soulful to me. Like in this track, the guy's like, "I feel nervous when I stand in front of a crowd of people. I don't really care, you know." I mean, I'm not trying to be mean. Like I'm just being honest here. Like. They're achieving what they want to achieve. It's just not something that I find interesting. And I guess, and this is, you know, honestly, this is my prejudice. I feel as though punk rock has become too safe and too gentle. I mean, I look back at all my favorite bands. They're wild dudes, wild ladies making this crazy racket. And now I go to a lot of these shows and it's like, I'm at like, you know, friggin' live, you know, throwing copper. It's just really gentle, you know, 90 beats per minute kind of stuff. And I mean, it's just not that exciting for me. And that's just me personally.
Well, I here's the thing. This is the first song. Maybe the whole, we don't know. The whole album might be faster this time.
So you think the rest will be like D-beat?
I don't think like that. But like, if you listen to their first album, it's pretty, at least the title track is pretty rocking. And I maybe they're going to go a little bit, kind of go away from what they did on the Impossible Past and kind of maybe mix it a little bit to go a little faster. I don't know. I just think these guys have really good melodies. That's why I like them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think at least as far as like what I've observed for their like trending, I would assume that probably the album will be, you know, fluctuating in intensity, not too much further from like where they are for In Remissions, but I don't know. I would be pleasantly surprised, which would be good.
I pre-ordered this.
Oh, yeah, me too.
So, absolutely.
The video was really polished. I really liked it. Like, also, I know that like they must have just done that when they were in California or somewhere West Coast.
See, that was the one thing I had an issue with this video. I thought it was too polished for them.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of the images are like sort of being pushed into by Epitaph, though. So
I mean, if you watch this, I watched this, then I watched the I Was Born music video, and is a huge difference. And right. The I Was Born music video is way better.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. Though there are cute little characteristics and cameos in this one, so that's cool.
That too. But
yeah, I think it's just like there's a certain image that, like, I don't know, I've been hearing friends complain to me about labels trying to push image like a little bit more exaggerated than they were before, and that's a bummer.
Yeah, this
because I mean video punk was... sellouts maybe. Yeah,
I heard it here first. Leanne said it. Menzingers sellouts.
Like, no, they're not sellouts at all.
So I saw them popping Cristal in the club the other night. It was crazy. They're
friends of mine, and they dress nicely. I mean, look,
these guys are. Listen, when I saw them, they were really gracious when I asked them to sign my On the Impossible Past vinyl. Like, they were really cool about it.
I asked for an autograph. They spit on me and got in their limos.
No, I mean, I just think this video was not a good fit. I mean, they could have done something really good if they went along with the lyrics for the video, like, and kind of made some imagery with it, but whatever.
I'm wondering if it just had to, like, maybe they had something else in mind that was more Philly-based or something, because I know they have a bunch of friends that do stuff there, but, like, maybe because they've been on this tour and they've just been running and stuff, and Epitaph has their schedule, and, you know, oh, well, this is coming out in whatever, like, 6 months or whatever, okay, we need to start leaking stuff. And this seems to be a hot week for that, too, because of all the other announcements that have been this week. But I like it. I think they're great.
I'm like a girl. Them.
I think that's what we're supposed to do anyways, right? Anyways.
I like them. I like the song. Not crazy about the video, but it didn't stop me from pre-ordering this one. So, or yeah.
Adam, should we play a song and come back with your favorite news of the week?
The new Weezer song from their cruise?
That's right. Back to the Shack, baby. All right, Adam, you want to play a jam or you want me to play a jam?
I can do it. That's cool.
All right. Kick us off, Big Daddy W.
All right. So I'm going to play a band that I played on this podcast like numerous times in the past, but I had been completely validated about my incessant playing of this band earlier. So earlier on the show, we had his name is totally escaping me. Our buddy from X-Friends.
Joel Tannenbaum.
Yeah, Joel Tannenbaum. So Joel was on the show, and after this appearance on the show, Joe and I became Facebook friends, and then Joe changed his name on Facebook like 4 times, so now he's something whatever the fuck else. But then I saw that he posted today, he posted a link to a new song by the Dirty Nil off their EP that just came out called Smite. I love the Dirty Nil. I've played them on the show like 3 or 4 times in the past. I think I first played them on the show in like 2012 or so. So all of a sudden Joel's talking about them on Facebook and he says something like, I'm going to pull it up because I feel totally validated here. So he posts the song. He says, wow. And then he says, I think the only time I've ever heard this band in the first place was because of Adam White on the Punk News podcast in 2012. And then all of his Philly buddies are jumping in there and saying, holy shit, this is great. This is our new favorite band. So there you go. The Nil are taking over America. I'm taking credit for them taking over America. They have a new EP out. I don't think it's on a label. I think they just self-released it called Smite. It is amazing, like everything that the Nil has done. They're a 3-piece band. They're up here. They play rock and roll. They're great. I don't really know what I'm going to get into in terms of description here, but we're going to play a song called Wrestle You to Husker Du from the new EP Smite, and you can find that on the dirtynail.bandcamp.com.
Long for me, lover.
Dirty Nail, and let me tell you, kids, you should listen to Adam White. Adam White is a tastemaker. About 2 years ago, Adam was like, the Spitz. I love the Spitz. The Spitz are great. I went and saw the Spitz. Spitz rule, man. I got into the Spitz because of Adam White. About a year ago, Adam White was like, man, Titus Andronicus rules. I love Titus Andronicus. Titus Andronicus is great. I went and saw Titus Andronicus in this tiny Moose Lodge. It was literally a Moose Lodge. And, man, they played for, like, literally 2.5 hours. One of the best shows I ever saw. Listen to Adam White. The man is a tastemaker. Adam, what's it like to be a tastemaker?
Really, what would validate this is if everyone would send me
$20. Well, that's right. You guys can send Adam White $20, and that is about to earn his freshest not Jackson. Who's on the $20? Not Jackson.
I don't know. What, in Canada? The fucking queen.
The queen. Here's how Adam's about to earn his newest queen. The Constantines, one of Adam White's very favorite bands, are set to reunite for shows this summer. Here's what guitarist vocalist Bri Webb said. A great irony in all this is that I've become more aware of what the Cons, that's Constantines, meant to people in the years since the band last played together than I ever was while we were active. I suppose there's no grand revelation. You often have to get outside of something to get a picture of what it is. We are grateful that the people love this band so much. We love it too. In the past year, we've had perfect occasions to reconnect with one another, to play in various forms, and to talk again as brothers do. Timing has never been the Con's greatest strength, and as we watch the occasion of the 10th anniversary of Shine a Light pass by, we joke together saying, well, maybe we'll do something for the 11th anniversary. True to the Con's decision-making process, the more something made us laugh, the better an idea it seemed. And support came from wonderful places. We've been talking a lot lately, and we've made some plans. So, Adam White, are you excited that the Cons are back together and are going to play some shows?
I am so excited that the Cons are back together and ready to play some shows. This happened in the most amusing way possible for me. There's a local label here and a local booking agency in St. Catharines, Ontario called Indoor Shoes, and I'm good friends with those guys. And Timmer, who's the label head there at Indoor Shoes, he is one of the biggest Cons fans that I know. He's, you know, he's the kind of guy that he will just, you know, he's throwing money at them to try to get them to reunite and come down and to come play here. So all of a sudden he phones me up. I'm at work the other day and I answer my phone and he's blubbering like a little girl. I don't know what he's saying. He's just a complete fucking wreck. His just emotions are oozing out of my phone. I don't know what's going on. And yes, there was a reunion announcement that came and poor Timmer just fucking lost his mind. But then what's really interesting is that, like, I went online, I could see from, like, you know, the Cons are a weird band in that if you're in Ontario, if you're from this area, they mean a lot to you. If you're outside of this area, you've probably never heard them before, except that they were just like some band on Sub Pop for a while. And like the amount of that they resonate sort of within this local scene is totally crazy. Like you can go to a show here and, you know, there's a good chance one of the opening bands is going to break out a Cons cover at some point. Like the Dirty Nil, who we just played, I've seen them play like 2 or 3 Cons covers in a row at a show and no one gets tired of that. It's like, yes, where they're going to play, you know, they're going to play like National Hum. They're going to play, you know, Arizona. They're going to play one of the, you know, 4 a.m. So they're going to get out and they're all of a sudden, there's just something about the Cons that like totally made the Ontario scene just hang on them. And that amount of love has just sort of grown and multiplied as a lot of the kids that listened to the Cons when they were around have now gone off and formed bands and stuff like that. And God, we've seen it from everyone. Like before the show started here, we're talking about Pup, the band that just signed to Side One Dummy. I'm absolutely positive they played Cons covers at their shows around here. I'm thinking about like Grays, which is a band that's starting to make more waves in the States out of Toronto. They have there's a video of them playing the song called National Hum, which was the first song off of the Constantine Shine a Light that was going around it earlier in the summer. There's just something about the Cons that like matter a lot to people that were in Ontario, that were in this scene way more than they did elsewhere. So yeah, so I'm fucking excited. I'm stoked. I'm a little bit nervous, not because I don't think that they'll be able to get back together and to keep doing what they were doing, because these guys were all, they were, but by the time they broke up, they had kind of entered into this kind of like really cool, mature stage about what they were doing. So for them to pick that up again, it's not like they have to try to recapture the fire of their youth or anything like that. I mean, like they only really broke up in like probably like 2010. But what I'm nervous about is that it's going to be one of these things where they get back together and they play like one or two completely out of my ability to go to shows in Toronto, and then that's it. So I hope that's not the case, but we'll have to see. The cons for those of you who have not ever heard this band, if you go back to their first record, which was just called The Constantines, everyone was calling that record The Constantines 13 songs when it came out. And people were calling it that kind of in jest because there was a lot of Fugazi in early Constantine stuff. And whenever you saw any of the reviews of the band that was coming out, it was like, oh, this band sounds like Fugazi with Joe Strummer singing for them. And that was like what their early, you know, that was kind of like where they started. So if you're me and you're going to school in the city in Guelph, Ontario, which is where the cons started, and, you know, I was writing for Punk News at the time. I was a huge Fugazi fan. I was a huge Clash fan. All of a sudden, there's this local band that emerges where everyone's like, oh, this is like the local Fugazi Clash. That is, I don't know. I guess that's why very quickly this band sort of like turned around and started to dominate my life. This is like, they just fit with sort of everything that I was into at the time. I think that, like I said this in a review that I wrote for Punk News a long time ago, is that if you want to compare them, say, if you want to compare like the stuff that the cons were releasing to, say, the latter day, like the argument, like the latter day Fugazi stuff, and kind of like figure out where they fit on that map. To me, like the cons are warm and Fugazi is cold, in that like Fugazi represented more of a there was more of an alienation related to urbanism that was in that later Fugazi stuff, and the con stuff had way more of a roots element to it, way more of a like this is a band that when they were bored would go and play shows of strictly Neil Young covers. They called their Neil Young cover band Horsey Craze, by the way. There was that split, like there was more roots, there was more Americana that was showing up in the con stuff. So yeah, that is my huge Constantine's ramble that I have decided to barf out for you.
I listened to them just this week, and yeah, I dig it. I don't understand what people keep saying that Restoration stole Constantine's sound, though.
No, that's a total joke, though.
Okay.
it was funny because when I first met the Restorations guys, that was one of the things that we first started talking about, was just like, I'm like, holy shit, you guys sound a lot like the Constantines. And then the answer to them was that, like, we love the Constantines. So yeah, I think there's a lot of homage to the cons and what they were doing, especially similarity in vocals and stuff to what Restorations is doing now. There's a definite like continuum that a band like the Constantines lives on with like stuff like the Weakerthans, in that there's that similar kind of like roots country-ish stuff that's informing what they're doing. And I mean, I'm looking at that from like a nationalist perspective and saying that's the Canadian in them, but I don't know if that's necessarily true. But yeah.
Yeah, do you worry that what they come out with next, if it's, might ruin your hopes and dreams, or like what you think of them so far? Do you think it's a good thing they get back together?
You know what? I have like rose colored glasses about this, I think, because normally when a band that I like that is broken up gets back together, I'm fairly skeptical of it. Because I don't know, I'm a big proponent that you can't recapture what you had.
Flag.
But yeah, but the flag, but in this case, in this case, I feel that like, when I don't know, they've all been, they broke up, and then as soon as they broke up, and it wasn't like a big explosion, they just kind of like stopped doing stuff and faded away, and then it was like, yeah, we're probably not going to play any shows. And then they all started doing really interesting solo stuff that I've kept up on. So there hasn't been like a gap necessarily. Like I'll still see these guys in various other bands. So now that they're kind of going to be back doing this thing, and I don't even know if it's probably just a limited thing, probably just a few shows. It'll probably be okay. Like it's not like, I don't know, like the Pixies reunion right now, where they're going to start like recording stuff like way after the fact that they should never record anything again. And then you're like, no, why are you recording stuff? Like, you had a legacy, leave it alone. I don't necessarily feel that way. I feel that if they were like, we're going to record some stuff, I'd be totally psyched. But I might just be like a total fanboy in this. So I probably don't have the most objective objective view.
I mean, summer reunions are bad, but, you know, summer reunions are awesome. And honestly, I find it's the reunions that you don't expect to happen that are the most awesome. Like, the Amoebics reunion album is their best album they ever put out. Antisex reunion is awesome. Zaun's reunion is awesome. Flag was one of the best shows I've ever seen. Top five shows I've ever seen. So, I mean, reunions can be really, really awesome. And I'd rather bands take the chance than, I guess, not take the chance, if you will. I'm so happy I got to see those bands. So, Adam, I feel the joy. I understand the joy that you feel with Constantine's getting back together. I assume it's how I felt when I learned about the existence of Flag or Amoebics.
I assume that you would be like my friend there who was just like blubbering and crying and trying to hold themselves together.
You mean when Flag got back together?
Yeah. But I picture you in some sort of like lawyery situation where you totally shouldn't be like all of a sudden crying because you read something on your phone.
Your Honor, you should not give my defendant the death sentence because, oh, 1 second, please. Oh my God, Flag got back together. I'm out of here.
Well, I am.
Speaking of reunions, Weezer just released a brand new song on the Weezer Cruise. The Weezer Cruise was a cruise where you could go on the water and watch Weezer and maybe some other bands play songs live. Weezer's new tune is called Back to the Shack, and it's getting mixed reception. Some people liked it, some people thought it was lame. Ricky and Leanne, did you guys like Back to the Shack? Do you guys like Weezer? Or should Weezer have just stayed dead?
I really liked Weezer when I was a teenager. I haven't really listened to Weezer in a while. I know all I knew about the cruise thing. One, I hear that music cruises somehow pay a ton for bands. But it seemed like a dumb, lazy sell thing to do. And Doug Benson was trying to pawn off his tickets he had to like a lucky fan or something. So he had endorsement there. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not really behind them anymore. Like, stay quiet. Like, the days are done.
So you think they should have stayed in the shack is what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, they could do that. Or, you know, get crushed by one. I don't know, whatever.
I never liked Weezer. Just ever. And this song, it kind of feels like they're kind of just phoning it in now. Didn't seem like all that. I didn't find it that interesting at all. So yeah, Back to the Shack for them.
Adam, Mr. Tastemaker, how do you feel about Weezer's newest jam?
The Blue Album was the first record I ever bought.
You mean vinyl record or album?
Well, it was the first CD that I ever bought as like a 12-year-old or 14-year-old or whatever I would have been at the time. Or, I don't know. What? When was that? 1994? How old was I? Someone. You all know how old I am. Fuck.
Well, you're 32 now, right?
Yeah, I'm as old as you. So whatever we were in 1994. So anyways, yeah, I have a lot of like teenage nostalgia for Weezer. I don't like or have sought out any of the stuff that I've heard them do in the past decade or so. So I have no particular affinity for them, and I would probably avoid seeing them because I think a lot of the stuff that I've heard since they got back together or started making records again has been dumb. And I was totally ready to write this off because the idea of a band putting together a cruise, it sets off that part of my brain that's thinking this is slightly too manufactured for me, and then I get very, very high on my punk rock horse and start to think that, like, you know, like, this isn't authentic, these guys aren't actually, you know, in a fucking van doing their thing, and then I don't like it anymore. But I watched this video in its entirety, and yeah, this song is kind of dumb. And then at the end of their set, they all go and they play with the drums. And I'm watching this, and this is, I assume, like, the last, like, the end of their cruise. So they're going and they're all playing with the drums at the end of their cruise. And they're, but then you look at the crowd and the crowd there, they've all got their phones up and they're filming it and they're making their little Weezer W's with their hands and everything like that. And I'm thinking like, I'm like, oh my God, these people have been on a boat with Weezer for a week listening to Weezer. Yeah. And this is, and they're not like on a boat with like cool Weezer from the 90s. They're on a boat with like now Weezer. And these kids are, or these kids, these people that are my age are totally fucking into it. And I'm just like, that's kind of nice. I don't know why. I'm like, I'm sort of charmed by that. Like, you know what? If you're really, if you're a Weezer super fan, and you want to go on a boat and listen to Weezer songs, then all the fucking power to you. I'm okay with that.
Adam, if you could go on a cruise with any band, what band would you go on a cruise with?
See, this is hard because you don't want to go on a cruise with like a, you wouldn't want to go on a cruise with like a really good hardcore band where like, you know, yeah, exactly. You listen to them for half an hour and you've been like, I've heard all your songs.
Twice.
We're on this boat.
I don't think a hardcore cruise, you'd get assaulted like multiple times.
Leanne, who would, what band would you go on a cruise with?
Well, I hate cruises. The idea of a cruise is terrible, but, that's hard. I have no idea. It's those things I don't really think about.
Ricky, how about you? We got a bunch of chickens around here.
Well, first of all, chickens. I'm brainstorming.
I've been on one cruise and it was awful. So
I'm not asking. I'm asking about what band would you go on a cruise with?
Well, I'm just saying Leanne's like not wrong about it. So
who would I go? Oh, God.
I don't want to say like.
Well, I'll tell y'all who I would
guess
on a
like
cruise
the
with.
I guess I do, I go on a Misfits. I think about a Misfits cruise. Like but a, I'm
Jerry
also I'm
cruise.
What?
Like Jerry only cruise?
I guess. I
you
mean,
guys,
yeah.
You guys
I mean,
can bench together.
Exactly.
Ricky, could you spot me, Ricky? You got it, Jerry.
You would get that. You would get like the devil lock would be sunburned into your forehead.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I'm also look. I'm looking at the prices for the Weezer cruise. It's kind of outrageous for like you have to love and live Weezer to want to do this.
I think Weezer fans do, to tell you the truth. Like, I think a lot of Weezer's fans would literally kill for Weezer.
It just. I can't totally get behind the idea of a cruise. Like, it's ridiculous. It's like having, you know, your own stupid sideshow in Las Vegas or, like, yeah. I don't know, something kitschy and just
I'll
stupid.
Tell you,
like, not paying attention to the main thing, which is music.
Can you imagine seeing, like, George Clinton on a cruise? That would be awesome. Or maybe, well, like,
that,
oh, what's
yeah,
that?
That totally factors into what my actual answer is going to be.
What's your actual answer?
My actual answer is that I could go and on like the Slackers cruise.
Ah, very good answer.
Right?
I was because, like, they're the only ones I've been on a boat and seen.
Yeah, no, but think about it. So they could go do like a full reel set. And the whole thing is like, you don't want to get tired of seeing this band play time after time after time on this boat. So you know what? One day they might not do a show. Maybe Dave will get his saxophone and go out and just like hang around by the pool and just like, you know,
right,
jam away on the sax.
Random right? Stuff that he does on the side as well.
Yeah,
oh, man,
you could totally have like every random side project that's come out of that band kind of like do a thing. So that's my answer.
That you know, good answer.
I'm gonna change. Adam. I'm gonna change my answer. I think I'm gonna. I'd rather see do a Lawrence Arms cruise because that would just be insanity when they're not playing too.
That would just be a drinking fest for like 9 days
yeah.
straight.
Which, like, what else are you going to do on the cruise?
Play pinball.
I mean, I'm still looking at these prices. It's kind of outrageous, like, for a week concert.
Well, speaking of outrageous prices, Morrissey just announced a tour, and I kind of wanted to go. But the tour is actually a fairly substantial tour. It runs, like, I guess about 2 months long. And it follows off not one, not two, but thrice tours canceled by Morrissey. He's canceled his last three tours. And I think it's, like, for his San Francisco, Oakland, and Sacramento, he's canceled, like, literally, like, seven or eight shows in a row. The tour runs from May through June. And it starts in San Jose, California, much love the Bay Area, and winds up June 28 in Florida. I was thinking about going to the Wilmington show or the Hershey show or the Atlantic City show. But, man, like after like fees and stuff, it's like $100. So I want to go. But honestly, I don't know if I want to pay $100 to see the Moz. I mean, I was thinking, I'm like, you know, I paid like $20 to see Off. And that's like the band I want to see more than anything right now. And Morrissey's getting $100. So I don't know, man.
Is it true that he's playing in LA with Tom Jones?
Yeah, he is.
Like,
good point.
Tom Jones?
Yeah, honestly, I kind of think that's a very Maz-ish thing to do, and I support it. He's also playing with Cliff Richard, who's kind of like the UK Tom Jones. And so, like, Morrissey, I think, is trying to elevate him into this kind of barbershop singer type kind of thing, like Sinatra, like Tony Bennett. Like, he's trying to transgress from rock and pop music to being an icon, which I support. I mean, because if any singer should be there, I would say it's the Moz. I mean, he's kind of a dick, but he's a phenomenal singer.
Given that Tom Jones is from Wales, how is he not the UK Tom Jones?
Oh, I always forget that. Tom Jones is a dick, too. So maybe that was the threshold. You have to be a dick to open for Morrissey.
I've seen a few interviews with Morrissey, and I just won't. After watching him, I just won't listen to his music anymore. The guy just disgusted me so much because he was such a dick, like you said, John.
I think that's what makes him so great, though, because he's got like all these love songs and stuff, and he's such a cantankerous kind of guy. He just put out a 12-inch Satellite of Love, which is him covering Lou Reed, and also he does Vicar and a Tutu on it, on the 7-inch version, he covers the Buzzcocks. Man, if you like Morrissey, his EPs are way better than his albums. The Satellite of Love 12-inch is he's probably the only guy that could actually do a good cover of Lou Reed's Satellite of Love. Instead of like growling it like Lou Reed does, he like sings it like almost like Sinatra, and it sounds so great, man. And so, I mean, but Ricky, you bring up a good point. Like, Morrissey probably is a dick, but does an artist have to be a nice to their art? I would say no, and I would say the fact that Morrissey is a kind of a dick kind of makes him that much more interesting of a character, because he is a dick, but I don't think he's vindictive necessarily. I think Morrissey has positive aspects. So he's a very complicated character, and I think part of that is the mythos that he's fashioned for himself, which I think that's the reason why he can get $100 tickets. I mean, because you never hear Morrissey on the radio, but he's kind of like a cult act, but his cult is gigantic.
True. I just got incredibly turned off. I just got really disgusted with his just whole attitude on stuff. Like, it's cool he's a vegan, that's fine, but the fact that he like tries to push it on you and just put it in your face and try and make you feel horrible for eating a burger, and like you are sentenced to death for murder or something like that. I mean, I just don't like his extremism.
See, but that's why I disagree with you, Ricky. See, we were talking about Menzingers. Menzingers aren't going to make anybody feel bad at their concert. Menzingers like, welcome to the concert, guys. Let's be friends. You know, and Morrissey's like, I hate you.
Menzingers, you know? To Morrissey.
No, but just like Morrissey, I don't know if you saw him. He was a while ago. Punk News put a link to his interview on Colbert, and that just ended it for me. I'm like, okay, this is getting ridiculous. Like, I think he wouldn't go into the building until he got rid of all the meat in the building. I mean, that's just being a drama queen after a while.
Yeah.
But I mean, he is a drama queen, though. That's why he's a ridiculous being, which I enjoy the fact that Morrissey has created a world where he can actually exist. Like, Rick, if you and I try to go into a building.
Yeah, Darwinism would wipe him out really quickly.
Yeah, it would.
I mean, like Ricky, if you and I try to go in a building, we're like, oh, we're not going in until you get rid of all the meat. They would, like, throw us out, you know? But Morrissey, they're like, yes, Mr. Moz, yes, you know? And it just – and the only reason that he can do it is because he said to the universe, I will be Morrissey, and the world will shift around my demanding requirements, around my vision of reality. And so he's quite a powerful person that way, which I enjoy that. Another people are like that. Jello Biafra is kind of like that, you know? KRS-One is totally like that. Chuck D is kind of like that. Ice-T is like that. I just love these characters that have an opinion of what they think is correct, even if they're wrong, and stick to their guns and don't try to smooth themselves out so they're more palpable.
Called you being ignorant, arrogant, and kind of a prick. Like, I don't know. Just because you contribute something positive, you don't need to be a douche the rest of the time. There's nothing you can do that I think makes up for that.
Well, I'm not saying he's not a douche. I definitely think he's a douche. But I do think because of the incredible art that he's created, he's actually entitled to some deference, to tell you the truth.
I think that there's probably a lot of people who work that he makes miserable.
I bet there are. I don't disagree.
I think he can find some deference, but like having this complete diva god complex is ridiculous.
Well, see, I think we're just arguing on where the line to be crossed is. You know, I
mean, oh, he like, crossed. He's way
Morrissey, like, and you can't be that bad.
I mean, is Nicki Minaj that different than Morrissey?
No, but that's part of the problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Adam White, last word. Where do you stand on the Moz? Where do you stand on Tom Jones? Where do you stand on Cliff Richard? Bonus question. Who gets named in Chumbawamba's first album, Hung and Crucified, out of those three people?
Well, I have a certain number of things I want to say about this. And really what I want to say is that America, your head's too big, because America... Your belly is too big, and I love you. I just wish you would stay where you belong. In America, it brought you the hamburger. Well, America, you know where you can shove your hamburger. And you want? Don't you wonder why in Estonia they say, "Hey, you big fat pig, you fat pig, you fat pig." Okay, sorry. I like Morrissey for the same reason that you do, John, is that like he's a complete fucking lunatic sometimes, and he has somehow created a sphere in which he can be Morrissey and people are okay with that, and it's sort of fascinating, and you don't get a lot of people that can just be like complete loud, you know, larger than life mythic assholes like that and somehow exist. So, yeah, I am sort of fascinated with Morrissey. And that's where I'm going to leave it.
Well, very good. I guess that's where we'll leave the podcast. We've got a track by a bunch of guys that are not gigantic assholes. They sent us in and they asked us to play this. This band is called British Teeth, and their EP is called British Teeth, and this track is called Stolen Records / Broken Strings. You can check it all out at their website at britishteeth.bandcamp.com. So once again, this is British Teeth doing Stolen Records.
Pass the time, the best days of your life will pass you by. I roll my eyes, reciting moments from a life we both designed. If I knew then what I know now, in light of all the pain it brings, would I forgive the blackened eyes, the stolen records, broken strings? That haunts the life behind me, when it's you that should be right beside me. Strike a match to light a flame, burn the bridge we built all over again. Promises made, we turn the page, it's hard for life to stay unchanged. A quiet anger boiled, but I was unafraid. Unearth the secrets that you buried like a grave. It feels like a ghost that haunts the life behind me, when it's you that should be right beside me. Right beside me. I know now, growing up meant falling down. The flag we flew is worn away, a monument to slow decay. It feels like a ghost that haunts the life behind me, when it's you that should be right beside me. Right beside me. Oh,
that about wraps up our podcast. Once again, Adam White, thanks for backing me up on the mods conflict. Thanks for being on my side, because you know we hate it when our friends become successful. But and every day is like Sunday on the Punk News podcast. But you know, when it's you and me, you're the one for me, Adam.
I'm just glad that I had a chance in my life to read lyrics from America Is Not the World on something. So
you know, there's an old zinger about Morrissey. Somebody said it. It's like, oh, it was Elvis Costello. I think he says Elvis Costello said Morrissey's great at writing song titles. He just forgets to write the song or something like that. Anyway, Ricky Frankel, thanks for being on the podcast again. How did you feel you did on your second appearance?
I think I did a lot better. I was able to talk a little bit more. Oh, well, a lot more.
If this was Olympic figure skating, what would the judges give you?
Eight.
Not bad.
Eight and a half. But all this Morrissey talk getting me hungry for In-N-Out, so that's where I'm headed now.
Oh, man, In-N-Out is where it's at. Lynn Cushing, how do you feel you did on your very first appearance, your debut?
I don't think I said anything that's going to piss too many people off. That's good. I have a hard time not doing that.
What's it like knowing that you just released your very personal, your own The Clash for Punk News, or your Nevermind the Bollocks, or your The Feeding of 5,000? Was it like knowing that you just completed that for your Punk News podcast?
What?
Your debut appearance.
Fantastic. I don't know.
And, of course, the opinions expressed on the Punk News podcast are the opinions of those making them exclusively and do not in any way represent the opinions of punknews.org. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. That's podcast@punknews.org. And we'll see you next week.